We got a lot more, and normally we play 5 or 10 minutes of each of those,
sure.
But we're running short on time this year. Those are collector's items.
That wonderful.
And then I got one other tape that I wanted to play here, our Beatles Holiday Messages.
Good.
We don't have time to hear all of them, so you guys pick a year here, either 1963, 64, 65, 66, 67, 68, or 69.
I'd like to go with 67 when they were first getting a little goofy, if you know what I mean.
Oh, that's right when they were in their Maharishi stage, right? Smoking those funny things with those funny pipes. Here are the Beatles.
It's a Bunzi remake, Space 444.
These are collector's items, these tapes. See, the Beatles used to put out a special Christmas record every year for their fans. Just full of greetings and stuff. I thought it was pretty cool. I used to have one when I was a kid.
Boys arrive at BBC House.
What do you want?
We have been granted permission, oh wise one.
Pass in peace.
They're doing a skit. I'm going to go to one of the earlier years when they weren't so much into skits as to when they were just sitting around and saying, Dave, this is John.
Happy Christmas, Ringo.
Thank you for buying me records. I think this is 64.
Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen.
The Beatles.
As the slow ray round about, deep and crisp and crispy. Brightly showed the boot last night on the musty cruel Henry Hall and Dave.
He's making up their own words. They're nutty. You nutty long hairs.
Hello, this is John speaking with his voice. We're all very happy to be able to talk to you like this on this little bit of plastic. This record reaches you at the end of a really gay year for us, and it's all due to you. When we made our first record on Parlophone towards the end of 1962, we hoped everybody would like what we'd already been our type of music for several years already. But we had no idea of all the gear things in store for us. It all happened, really, when Please Please Me became a number one hit, and after that, well, caught a blimey's heather no. Our biggest thrill of the year, well, I suppose it must have been topping the bill at the London Palladium, and then, only a couple of days later, being invited to take part in the Royal Variety Show.
You know, let me interrupt you. You hear this, and you see what it is that we were all so caught up with.
Sure.
I mean, these guys were really real guys who seemed to be pretty unaffected by the fact that they were so popular.
They're all pretty down to earth, too.
Hello, this is John.
Here's a message for you.
This is Ringo. Someday I'm going to be selling wine coolers. wearing a big bear hat.
That's me. I'll be doing that and also being the voice for that little choo-choo train.
Choo-choo train. After George Carlin gets fired from that gig.
This time last year, we're all dead chuffed because Love Me Do got into the top 20. And we can't believe, really, that so many things have happened in between already. Just before I pass you over to Paul, I'd like to say thank you to all the Beatle people who have written to me during the year, and everyone who sent me gifts and cards for my birthday, which I'm trying to forget, in October. I'd love to reply personally to everyone, but I just haven't enough pens. In the meantime, Gary Crimble to you, Gary Mimble to you, Gary Babel, dear Christmas, happy birthday, me too.
This is Paul here. Everything that John said goes for me too. Especially the bit about birthday cards and the parcels. Because all our homes and offices got stacks of mail last year.
Ow!
Well, it was my birthday. Anyway, we're all dead pleased by the way you've treated us in 1963. And we're trying to do everything we can to please you with the type of songs we write and record next year. Oh yeah, somebody asked us if we still like Jelly Babies. Well, we used to like them, in fact we loved them, and we said so in one of the papers, you see. Ever since then, been getting them in boxes, packets and crates. Anyway, we
feel like Diet Cherry Coke.
Yeah, you see. But we still like peppermint creams and chocolate drops and jelly
nuts. Sure, yeah, send us free stuff. That's what they're saying.
Yes, yes, oh yes.
Well, lots of people asked us what we enjoy best, concerts and television or recording. We like doing stage shows because, you know, it's great to hear an audience enjoying themselves. But the thing we like best, I think so anyway, is going into the recording studio.
Yeah, lovely. We enjoy that
love
very
that,
kindly.
To make new records, which is what we've been doing all day before we started on this special message. Well, what we like to hear most is one of our songs, you know, taking shape in a recording studio, one of the ones what John and I have written. And then listening to the tapes afterwards to hear how it all worked out, you see. Well, I'm running over my time and people are telling me to stop. Like,
stop,
Ringo,
stop shouting those animals.
I'll finish now with it. Wishing everyone happy Krimble and a Merry New Year, and especially all the ones who paid the subscription.
Ja, das wird und danke schön und den Chris von eben. Ja, den Chris von dieser schon. Ja, das wird wunderschön, boy. Danke schön.
Hello, Ringo here. As you know, I was the last member to join the Beatles. I started to play drums in the group 1962.
I could just fade it out there. We got a break. We'll be right back. Happy Kringle or whatever it is that they said.
This should be played at high volume.
The Don and Mike Show.
Preferably in a residential area.
Take a nothing day and suddenly make it seem worthwhile. Don and Mike.
It's like something my dad would think is hilariously funny. From the Benny Hill era. Great radio stations across America, like these, Hot Dog, WHTK, Rochester, New York, WJJD, Chicago, and 106.7 WJFK-FM, right here, Washington, D.C., our flagship station. Let's get to radio's Buzz Burbank for a quick update from the news cubicle.
I'll make you stop laughing.
And then it's time for the annual radio presentation of It's a Wonderful Life.
All right.
Who is Bart with?
I think he's back here playing Pogs. He has a huge collection of Pogs now, and he's slamming away.
He's with the other kids.
Is he with Charlie Broyhill and Robbie?
Charlie Broyhill and Robbie and James.
Charlie's playing the John Madden Game Boy game, and Robbie is enjoying a lovely Coca-Cola.
It's very festive in the background.
Okay. Every year he finds someone new to hang around with.
That's right. He's having a good time.
Let's get an update on the news. And as I said, here is radio's Buzz Burbank. Then you'll want to hang around for It's a Wonderful Life.
All right.
In its entirety. Hello, Buzz.
Hi, Don. Hi, Mike. It turns out the guy with the bomb on the New York subway yesterday was apparently planning to extort money from the Transit Authority. They found evidence to that effect in his home in New Jersey. Edward Leary, who was critically injured when the bomb went off prematurely, now faces 45 counts of attempted murder and assault since 45 people were injured. New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani says,
if you commit an act like this, every single resource of this city will be used to try to catch you and to hold you to account for this so that we convince other people not to do it.
North Korea is hinting that it may have a Christmas gift for the U.S., the release of the pilot who survived when one of our choppers went down there over the weekend. North Korea has already returned the body of the pilot who died, but it's still holding Chief Warrant Officer Bobby Hall. Now, it says it will do its best to resolve the situation on a humanitarian basis. North Korea says it shot down the chopper because it was on a spying mission, one of 200 such missions since the 1st of November, North Korea says. The U.S. says the shoot-down was unnecessary, and it's examining the body of the dead pilot to determine his exact cause of death. The government's starting to get tough with parents who don't make their child support payments. Attorney General Janet Reno says federal prosecutors have filed 28 lawsuits demanding nearly $1 million in overdue payments. But that's just a drop in the deadbeat parent bucket. Reno says the children of these parents have about $34 billion coming. There's a layer of crude oil on the Mississippi River for a six-mile stretch downstream of Chalmette, Louisiana. The oil escaped from a leaky barge last night, forcing the Coast Guard to close the busy waterway this morning. Cleanup crews are now trying to contain the mess. A judge in Chicago has told a landlord he has to rent one of his apartments to a couple the landlord believes is living in sin. The couple is not married, and the landlord says it violates his religious beliefs to allow sex outside of matrimony to take place in his building. But the judge today ordered the landlord to let the couple rent the place, telling the landlord he cannot impose his moral standards on his tenants.
The stock market was mixed today. The Dow closed 13 points higher, but losers outnumbered gainers by a 12 to 11 margin. The S&P was also just slightly higher, but NASDAQ was up over 2 points. People are still human, even these days, even in New York. That story in sports, next. This buzzcast brought to you by Samuel Adams Boston Lager. You're listening to the Don and Mike Show. In sports, the two sides in the baseball dispute met briefly this afternoon here in Washington. In that meeting, the players presented a modified proposal, which the owners are now studying. The owners have said they'll impose a salary cap at midnight if there's not a settlement. There's no progress to report in the hockey dispute. Conventional wisdom says the season will have to be scrapped if something isn't worked out by January 1st, and no new talks are scheduled. The NBA plays on, meanwhile. Tonight, Cleveland puts its 6-game winning streak on the line against the Knicks in New York. The Washington Bullets visit the Golden State Warriors, and Charlotte hosts Philadelphia. Sacramento Kings center Dwayne Coswell's out on bail after being arrested on charges of spousal abuse and false imprisonment. And it's no secret that Rich Kotite's status as head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles is shaky at best, so it's no surprise that owner Jeffrey Lurie is giving Kotite permission to talk to the new Carolina Panthers. Finally, Christmas 1994, New York City. The traffic is thick and the holiday stress is starting to show over and above the usual toughness of the Big Apple. A guy on a bicycle gets hit by a van, goes flying through the air, and lands on the pavement. Just another day in New York. Or is it? Nearby, there are 10 sidewalk Santas on their way to their various assignments. They see what's happened to the bicyclist. One of the Santas is, the rest of the year, an emergency medical technician. And while 9 of the Santas go to work calling for help and directing traffic, the paramedic goes to work on the injured bicyclist, who opens his eyes as he regains consciousness and looks up at the medic with the red hat and the white beard and asks, "Am I at the North Pole?" Merry Christmas, everyone. I'm Buzz Burbank on the Don and Mike Show.
Thank you, Buzzy.
Thank you for listening. I'd like to wish you a Merry Christmas and a wonderful New Year.
It's time for It's a Wonderful Life.
All right.
Like you haven't seen it on TV 10,000 times.
That's right.
This will be our second annual radio recreation of the timeless classic.
Yeah, ours is better.
Featuring the Dynamite Players, and you'll hear it right after this. Please stay with us.
Radio Gods.
I give up tears for the British showing air.
Don and Mike.
Thank you, Sherry.
Don Geronimo and Mike O'Mara.
How are you?
WKFK.
What draws my admiration? What is that which gives me joy? The Don and Mike Show.
All right, now, Sherry, you're the actress among us. How do you call all of the prospective Don and Mike players to the stage?
I think you would say places, everyone.
Places, everyone.
I like the sound of that.
Places, everyone. All right. Wipers.
Here we go. If it was television, you'd say stand by.
All right, now, we've all got our copies of the scripts. Buzz Burbank will be our announcer and be our narrator for much of this because it's obviously not the entire It's a Wonderful Life. It is as close as we can come.
We had to hack it up a bit.
Rob, please tell us who will be playing what role.
Okay, I have actually a...
This is our director, writer. Rob Spiewak.
Thank you.
Andy Marvelous. There you go, right here. Rob.
And I wish you'd direct a lot of applause towards Jimmy because he really helped me with a lot of the stapling and editing and whatnot there.
Thank you, Jimmy. Jimmy the intern.
I'll run through this as quick as I can. Buzz is the narrator. George is played by Don. Sherry is Mary. Diana is playing Violet. Charlie Stoink Stabilak plays Uncle Billy. Mike plays Mr. Potter. Diana plays Mrs. Bailey. Jimmy plays Harry Bailey. I play Mr. Gower. I play Sam Wainwright. I also play Marty. Charlie plays Mr. Partridge, the principal. Charlie Broyhill also plays George's father. The man is played by myself. Ruth is played by Diana.
How many characters so far would you have?
How many parts do you give yourself, Rob?
I want all the lines and all the lunch money. That's how I wanted it to work out. If I had my way, if I had my druthers.
If you were king.
Diana plays Mrs. Hatch. Jimmy plays Ed. I play Charlie. Diana plays Mrs. Thompson, the woman. Charlie plays two men. I play Rob. I also play Reinman. Jimmy plays Eustace. Diana plays Tilly. Jimmy plays the bank examiner and Pete. I play Nick. Charlie plays Mr. Martini. Mr. Welch is played by Jimmy. Mike plays Clarence. Charlie plays the toll... Charlie Broyhill, rather, plays the tollkeeper. Jimmy, who, just good typecasting, plays the bouncer. I play Bert. Jimmy and Rob both play the man, or I guess we both play men, I should say. Men. Janie is played by Diana, and Annie... is Sherry.
You know when it takes 20 minutes
Bart,
to tell you who's
Bart
playing?
Bart is Zuzu. I'm sorry.
Zuzu, the one, he's the one that says daddy every time a bell rings. Okay.
I was going to say, you know when it takes 20 minutes to explain the cast that this is going to be a long radio play.
Let's begin.
Get a comfortable seat.
Nestle the kids around your ample bosom.
Look at everybody taking their places.
And let's cue our announcer.
Once upon a time, in a small, sleepy town called Bedford Falls, there lived a man named George Bailey. He was an ordinary man whose life at first glance seemed equally ordinary. However, as this story unfolds, we'll see that his life was anything but ordinary. It was, in fact, a wonderful life. As our story begins, we meet a young George Bailey, 12 years old to be exact. He's just recovered from pneumonia, caught it when he jumped into a frozen lake to save his little brother Harry. George was proclaimed a hero for saving his brother's life, and it barely bothered him that his sickness caused him to lose the hearing in his right ear. George's main concern was to beat the symptoms of pneumonia so he could return to his job at Gower's Drugstore.
It's me, Mr. Gower. George Bailey.
You're late.
Yes, sir.
Violet.
Oh!
Jeez, we're off to
another start. Come on,
we gotta pay attention.
Hello, George.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Violet.
Made up your mind yet?
I'll take chocolate.
With coconuts?
I don't like coconuts.
You don't like coconuts? Say, brainless, don't you know where coconuts come from? Look at here, from Tahiti, Fiji Islands, the Coral Sea.
A new magazine. I never saw it before.
Of course you never. Only us explorers can get it. I've been nominated for membership in the National Geographic Society. I'm going out exploring someday, you watch. And I'm going to have a couple of harems, maybe three or four wives. You wait and see.
George! George!
Yes, sir?
You're not Big Dick, Mary.
No, sir.
At this moment, George notices an open telegram addressed to Mr. Gower on the cash register. It reads, "We regret to inform you your son died this morning of influenza. We await instructions from you." George turns to Mr. Gower to offer any help that he can.
Mr. Gower, do you want something? Anything?
No.
Anything I can do back here?
No! Take these capsules over to Mrs. Blades. She's waiting for them.
Yes, sir. They have the diphtheria there, haven't they, sir? Is it a charge, sir?
Yes, charge.
Mr. Gower, I think...
I'm good going!
Yes, sir.
George noticed that Mr. Gower, obviously in a drunken stupor, inadvertently filled the medicine capsules with poison. Confused by the situation, George decides to ask his father what to do. When the lad gets to the Bailey Building and Loan, he finds that his dad is busy arguing with Bedford Falls' meanest and most powerful citizen, Henry F. Potter. George is greeted by his Uncle Billy.
Avast there, Captain Cook! Where are you heading?
Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Don.
Got to see Pop, Uncle Billy.
Some other time, George.
It's important.
There's a squall in there. It's shaping up into a storm. Ooh. Ooh. I'm not crying, Mr. Potter.
Well, you're begging, and that's a whole lot worse.
All I'm asking for is 30 days more. Pops! Just a minute, son. Just 30.
Oh, let me stop and ponder that concept of Charlie Broyhill being my father.
Perfect casting, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Pops! Just a minute, son. Just 30 short days. I'll dig up that 5,000 somehow.
Shut me up. I'm horny.
Pops!
Have you put any real pressure on those people of yours to pay those mortgages?
Times are bad, Mr. Potter. A lot of these people are out of work.
Then foreclose.
I can't do that. These families have children.
They're not my children.
But there's somebody's children, Mr.
Excuse me, I had a pop in there.
Then foreclose. Let's go reverse it all the way back so George can get his pop in.
I've only got one line.
There you go. Then foreclose. Get back to I can't do that.
I can't do that. These families have children. Pop! No. Okay, Potter.
As director, can we all go back to page 125, Potter's line, have you put any real pressure?
Have you put any real pressure on those people of yours to pay those mortgages?
Times are bad, Mr. Potter. A lot of these people are out of work.
Then foreclose, Broyhill.
I can't do that. These families have children.
Pop?
They're not my children.
But they're somebody's children, Mr. Potter.
Are you running a business or a charity?
Well,
or?
All right.
You stepped on my line, butthead. Are you running a business or a charity ward?
Well, all right.
Not with my money.
Mr. Potter, what makes you such a hard-skulled bastard? You have no family, no children. You can't begin to spend all the money you've got.
So, I suppose I should give it to miserable failures like you and that idiot brother of yours to spend for me.
He's not a failure.
You can't say that about my father.
George.
I'm sharing the lines with Bart. You're not.
You're the biggest man in town.
Run along.
Bigger than him.
Run along.
Bigger than everybody.
All right, son, thanks. I'll talk to you tonight.
Meanwhile, back at Gower's drugstore.
Why, that medicine should have been there an hour ago. It'll be over in 5 minutes, Mrs. Blaine. Where's Mrs. Blaine's box of capsules?
Capsules?
Did you hear what I said, boy?
Yes, sir, I...
What kind of tricks are you playing anyway? Didn't you deliver them right? Don't you know that boy is very sick? Sound effects, cue.
You're hurting my sore ear.
You lazy hoover, take that with your frying pan.
Mr. Gower,
you don't know what you're doing. You put something wrong in those capsules. I know you're unhappy. You got that telegram and you're upset. You put something bad in those capsules. It wasn't your fault, Mr. Gower. Just look and see what you did. Look at the bottle you took the powder from. It's poison. I say it's poison. I know you feel bad. Don't hurt my sore ear again.
No.
Don't hurt my ear again.
George.
Mr. Gower, I won't ever tell anyone. I know what you're feeling. I won't ever tell us all. Hope to die, I won't.
Oh, George.
George never told anyone about Mr. Gower's mistake. He kept it a secret for the rest of his life. Now we skip ahead a few years. George is 23 years old, and his little brother Harry is just about to graduate from high school. At the Bailey household, the two Bailey siblings are dancing around, preparing for the big dance at the high school. Their mother wishes they would just calm down and relax.
And we've got a break for commercials. We'll pick it up right here when we come back on our best ever rendition of It's a Wonderful Life. We'll continue after this, don't you?
This is the Don and Mike Show.
That's a good show.
Ooh, Merry Christmas, baby.
How about this one? Well, we could sing with the Beach Boys all day long, or we could get back to It's a Wonderful Life.
There's work to be done, Don.
Buzz?
Yes.
I would never want to take the place of our great director, Bobo Spielberg.
Yes.
But may I request that you pick it back up with the narration?
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
That last scene. And now back to It's a Wonderful Life.
Where George Bailey is 23 years old now, and his little brother Harry is just about to graduate from high school. At the Bailey household, the two Bailey siblings are dancing around, preparing for the big dance at the high school. Their mother wishes they would calm down and talk.
George, Harry, you're taking the house down. Stop it!
Oh, let him alone. I wish I was up there with him.
Oh, Harry, I'm having dinner too. George, Harry, come down to dinner this minute. Everything's getting cold, and you know we've been waiting for you.
Boy, oh boy. Oh, boy. My last meal at the old Bailey boarding house.
Oh, my lens, my blood pressure.
Papa, can I have the car? I'm going to take over a lot of plates and things.
What plates?
Oh, Mom, I'm chairman of the Eats Committee, and we only need a couple of dozen.
Oh, no, you don't. Harry, now, not my best Haviland.
Oh, let him have the plates, Mother.
Hope you have a good trip, George. Uncle Billy and I are going to miss you.
I'm going to miss you, too, Daddy. What's the matter? You look tired.
Oh, I had another tussle with Potter today.
Oh.
I thought when we put him up on the board of directors, he'd ease up us a little bit.
I wonder what's eating that old money-grubbing buzzard anyway.
Oh, he's a sick old fart. Frustrated and sick in his mind. Sick in his soul, if he has one. Hates everybody that has anything that he can't have, or hates himself mostly, I guess.
You come in later, George?
What do you mean, and be bored to death?
Couldn't want a better death. Lots of pretty girls, and we're going to use that new floor of yours tonight, too.
Oh, try that line again, Jimmy.
Jimmy, did you do any rehearsing on these lines at all?
I just stapled. That's it. Okay. Couldn't want a better death. Lots of pretty girls, and we're going to use that new floor of yours tonight, too.
Excellent job, Jimmy.
I hope it works. I hope it works.
No gin tonight, son?
Oh, Papa, just a little.
No, son, not one drop.
This is the worst acting I've ever heard. Father? Look me in the eye, Father.
Father?
Did I act like that when I graduated from high school?
Pretty much. You know, George, wish we could send Harry to college with you. Your mother and I talked it over half the night, period.
We have that all figured out. You see, Harry will take my job at the building alone, work there 4 years, then he'll go.
He's pretty young for that job.
Well, no younger than I was.
Maybe you were born older, George.
How's that?
I say, maybe you were born older. I suppose you've decided what you're going to do when you get out of college.
You know what I've always talked about. Build things, design and build buildings, plan modern cities, all that stuff I was talking about.
Still, after that first million before you're 30.
No, I'll settle for half that in cash.
Of course, it's just a hope, but wouldn't you consider coming back to the building alone? Would you? I know it's soon to talk about that.
Oh, Pop, I couldn't. I couldn't face being cooped up for the rest of my life in a shabby little office. Oh, I'm sorry, Pop. I didn't mean that remark, but this business of nickels and dimes and spending all your life trying to figure out how to save 3 cents on a length of pipe, I'd go crazy. I want to do something big and important.
You know, George, I feel that in a small way.
Lower.
Oh, no.
Yeah, do it in your deep voice.
Your deep voice, Joe.
Okay. You know, George, I feel that in a small way, we are doing something important. Satisfying a fundamental urge. It's deep in the race for a man to own his own roof and walls and fireplace. And we're helping him get those things in our shabby little office.
I know, Dad. I wish I felt. But I've been hoarding pennies like a miser in order to. Well, most of my friends have already finished college. I just feel like if I don't get away, I'd bust.
Yes, yes, you're right, son.
You see what I mean, don't you, Pop?
This town is no place for any man unless he's willing to crawl to Potter. You've got talent, son. I've seen it. You get yourself an education, then get the hell out of here.
Pop, you want a shock? I think you're a great guy.
I know. Have a good time, son.
So George decides to go to the dance after all, and he's soon greeted by a lot of his friends from all around Bedford Falls.
You knew my old kid brother, George. I'm going to put him through college.
Well, here comes George. Hello, hee-haw!
Uh-oh, Sam Wainwright. How are you? When did you get here?
Oh, this afternoon. Thought I'd give the kids a treat.
Old college graduate now, huh?
Yeah, old Joe College Wainwright, they call me. Well, freshman, looks like you're going to make it after all.
Yep.
Harry, you're the guy I want to...
Find out who it was later on, but I couldn't find out. Now, why aren't you looking at me? No, nobody'd ever tell you whoever it was because they'd be scared. They know what kind of...
Hey, you remember George. This is Mary. Well, I'll be seeing you.
Well,
now to get back to my story, see? Hey, this is my dance.
Oh, why don't you stop annoying people? Oh,
I'm sorry. Hey!
Well, hello.
Hello. You look as if you didn't know me.
Well, I don't.
You pass me on the street almost every day.
Me?
Uh-huh.
Oh, that was a little girl named Mary Hatch. That wasn't you.
Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay. The Big Charleston Contest. The prize, a genuine loving cup. Those not tapped by the judges will remain on the floor. Let's go.
I'm not very good at this.
Neither am I.
Okay. What can we lose? Hey, they're cheering us. I say they're cheering us.
You must be good.
I say they're cheering us.
And oh,
you must be good. Thank you. That's what I was waiting for. We must be good.
What George and Mary don't realize is that while they are dancing, the gymnasium floor is opening up right beneath their feet. And as the dancing continues, they get precariously close to falling into the pool. And as you may guess, they do, followed by everyone else at the dance. It's a swimming pool filled with dancing high school students and teachers. Later in the evening, George is walking Mary Hatch back to her home.
Hold on, did I miss the sound effects? Everybody in the pool?
And there they go.
There we go. We got a break for commercials. There's the sound of everybody in the pool. Whooping it up.
All right.
Good dance.
Where are we now in the movie?
We're at the very beginning.
You're about to start singing Buffalo Gals.
Oh, we're only up to that point?
Yeah.
Isn't that like 10 minutes into the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. we had the same problem last year.
Remember, this is a leaner, meaner script this year. That's why it's moving so fast.
No, we're all just putting so much into it.
we'll be right back. More of It's a Wonderful Life.
To protect and serve, it's the Don and Mike Show.
Howdy, hi, we're back. We are right in the beginning stages of It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes, very beginning stages.
They have just had the dance where the pool has opened up and everybody has fallen in the pool.
And now George and Mary are walking back and they're all wet.
So to speak. And then this is where the transition music goes, right? Even though I just played it, they go... Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight? Come out tonight, can't you come out tonight? Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight and dance by the light of the moon? Hot dog! Just like my organ.
Beautiful.
And I told Harry I thought I'd be bored to death. You should have seen the commotion in that locker room. I had to knock down three people to get this stuff or wear it here. Here, let me hold that old wet dress of yours.
Do I look as funny as you do?
Hold on, blood cardio.
Can I open the chopper and the fire truck?
Sure, you go ahead. You play with those. Knock yourself out.
Okay.
All right. Have a good time. Have a good time.
Hit. Good. I'm psyched.
I'm sorry. Here, let me hold that old wet dress of yours.
Do I look as funny as you do?
I guess I'm not quite the football type. You look marvelous. You know, if it wasn't me talking, I'd say you are the prettiest girl in town.
Well, why don't you say it?
I don't know. Maybe I will say it. How old are you anyway?
18.
18? Why, it was only last year you were 17.
Too young or too old?
No, just right. Your age fits you. Yes, sir, you look a little older without your clothes on. I mean, without a dress. You look older, I mean younger. You look just... Uh-oh.
Sir, my train, please.
A pox upon me for a clumsy lout. Your caboose, my lady.
You may kiss my hand.
Hand. Hey. Hey, Mary.
As I was lumbering down the street...
Okay, then. I'll throw a rock at the old Granville house.
Oh, no, don't. I love that old house.
No, you see, you make a wish and you try to break some glass. You gotta be a pretty good shot nowadays, too.
Oh, no, George, don't. It's full of romance, that old place. I'd like to live in it.
In that place?
Uh-huh.
I wouldn't live in it as a ghost. Now watch. Right on the second floor there. Here I go.
What'd you wish, George?
Well, not just one wish. A whole hatful, Mary. I know what I'm going to do tomorrow and the next day and the next year and the year after that. I'm shaking the dust off this crummy little town off my feet. I'm going to see the world. Italy, Greece, the Parathon, the Colosseum. Then I'm coming back here to go to college and see what they know. Then I'm going to build things. I'm going to build airfields. I'm going to build skyscrapers 100 stories high. I'm going to build bridges a mile long. Are you going to throw a rock? Hey, that's pretty good.
What did you wish for, Mary?
Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight?
Can't you come out tonight? Can't you come out tonight? Buffalo gals, can't you come out tonight? And dance by the light of the moon. What did you wish when you threw that rock?
Oh, no.
Come on, tell me.
If I told you, it might come true.
Just what is it you want, Mary? What do you want? You want the moon? Just say it. You want, you say the word, and I'll throw a lasso around it and pull it down. Hey, that's a pretty good idea. I'd give you the moon, Mary.
I'll take it. And then what?
Well, then you could swallow it. And it would dissolve, see? And the moonbeams would shoot out of your fingers and your toes and the ends of your hair. Am I talking too much?
Yes. Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
How's that?
Why don't you kiss her instead of talking her to death?
You want me to kiss her, huh?
Youth is wasted on the wrong people.
Hey, hold on. Hey, Robbie, come on back out here. I'll show you some kissing that'll put hair back on your head. What are you? Well, your robe has come off. Mary. Okay, I give up. Where are you?
Over here in the hydrangea bushes.
Here you are. Catch. No, wait a minute. What am I doing? This is a very interesting situation.
Please give me my robe.
A man doesn't get in a situation like this every day.
I'd like to have my robe.
Hold on. What happened to the car sound effect? Oh, I got it. I'm sorry. Let's take it from that last line. I got too much to do over here. A man doesn't get in a situation like this every day.
I'd like to have my robe.
Not in Bedford Falls, anyway.
Ouch.
Gesundheit. This requires a little thought here.
George Bailey, give me my robe.
I've heard about things like this, but I've never.
Shame on you. I'm going to tell your mother on you.
Oh, my mother's way up the corner there.
I'll call the police.
They're way downtown. They'd be on my side, too.
I'm going to scream.
Maybe I could sell tickets. Let's see. No, the point is, in order to get this robe, I've got it. I'll make a deal with you, Mary. Mary, I'm sorry. I've got to go.
Come on, George. Let's hurry.
Did you get a doctor?
Yes, Campbell's there now. Wee! Having a car.
I think Buzz needs his microphone.
Oh, sorry. Hi, Buzz.
Hi.
You got your microphone.
Oh, well, we've already passed the part where I would have narrated.
We're up to break nine.
Yeah, okay.
Forward momentum, guys.
All right. Mr. Bailey's stroke proved fatal, and when he passed, the stockholders in the building and loan considered closing the business. Mr. Potter was vehement in his efforts to kill the business, but George was able to persuade them to keep it open on the condition that he would run the building and loan. This meant George did not get to go to Europe. Instead, he used his money to send his little brother Harry through college. George stayed in Bedford Falls for 4 years at the building and loan, waiting for Harry to return to run the business so that George could seek his fortune. George and Uncle Billy are waiting for Harry's return at the train station.
Look, there are plenty of jobs around for somebody who likes to travel. Why, look at this. There, Venezuela oil fields. Wanted, man with construction experience. Here's the Yukon right here. Wanted, man with engineering experience. There she blows. You know what the three most exciting sounds in the world are?
Uh-huh. Breakfast is served. Lunch is served. Dinner is served.
No. Anchor chains, plane motors, and train whistles.
Peanut? Hey. Want to go in the car again?
There's the professor now. Old Professor Phi Beta Kappa Bailey. All-American!
Well, if it isn't old George Geographic Explorer Bailey. What? No husky dogs, no sled? Uncle Billy, you haven't changed a bit.
Nobody ever changes around here. You know that.
Oh, am I glad to see you.
Oh, wait. Wait a minute.
Hello.
How do you do?
Ruth Dakin.
Ooh.
Ruth Dakin Bailey, if you don't mind.
Well, I wired you. I had a surprise. Here she is. Meet the wife.
Well, what do you know, wife?
Well, how do you do? Congratulations. What am I doing? Harry, why didn't you tell somebody? What's a pretty girl like you doing marrying this two-headed brother of mine?
Well, I'll tell you. It's purely mercenary. My father offered him the job.
Oh,
He gets you and a job. Well, Harry's cup runneth over.
George, about that job. Ruth spoke out of turn. I never said I'd take it. You've been holding the bag here for years, and, well, I won't let you down, George. I would like to. Oh, wait a minute. I forgot the bags. I'll be right back.
It was a surprise to me. This is the new Mrs. Bailey, my nephew's wife.
Old friend of the family.
Oh, of course. I've heard him speak of you.
And I want to tell you, we're going to get the biggest party this town ever saw.
George, that's all Harry ever talks about.
Ruth, this job, what about this job?
Oh, well, my father owns a glass factory in Buffalo. He wants to get Harry started in the research business.
Is it a good job?
Oh, yes, very. Not much money, but a good future. You know, Harry's a genius at research. My father fell in love with him.
And you did, too?
At the wedding reception for Harry and Ruth, everyone seems to be having a great time, except for George. He's obviously upset that Harry won't be taking over the building and loan, and that he's stuck with his dead-end job. His mother approaches him for a little chat.
We'll pause right there. Someone please remind me the next time we start a break, I don't know if Buzz's microphone turned on, for goodness sake.
Buzz, just knock on the glass or something.
Okay, I tried.
5,000 carts over here and all these gosh darn buttons.
We'll be back with more of It's a Wonderful Life. Right after this, Cuddly High, we're back on great radio stations like these across America. Oh, yeah. What is this? We're pulling out all the stops today.
World War II version of A Christmas Tree or what?
No, it's the Snoopy song.
All right.
WLAS, Jacksonville, North Carolina, KGEO, Bakersfield, California, and 105.9 The Line, WLNI, Lynchburg, Roanoke, Virginia. This is the last hour of our 1994 show. I mean, this is it for 1994. This is the last hour.
That's right. We're going to see you next year.
Get us while you can. Let's get right back to It's a Wonderful Life. Here is our announcer, Buzz Burbank.
And George is obviously upset that Harry won't be taking over the building and loan and that he's stuck with his dead-end job. And then George's mother approaches him for a little chat.
Hello, Mom.
How do you like her?
She's swell.
Yeah, looks like she can keep Harry on his toes.
Keep him out of Bedford Falls, anyway.
Did you know that Mary Hatch is back from school?
Uh-huh.
Came back 3 days ago. Nice girl, that Mary. Kind that will help you find the answers, George. Oh, stop that grumpy. Can you give me one good reason why you shouldn't call on Mary?
Sure. Sam Wainwright.
Huh?
Yeah, Sam's crazy about Mary.
Well, she's not crazy about him.
Well, how do you know? Did she discuss it with you?
No.
Well, then how do you know?
Well, I've got eyes, haven't I? Why, she lights up like a firefly whenever you're around.
Oh.
And besides, Sam Wainwright's away in New York, and you're here in Bedford Falls.
And all's fair in love and war?
Well, I don't know about war.
Mother, you know I can see right through you. Right through your back collar button. You're trying to get rid of me, huh?
Uh-huh.
All right, Mother. Old building and loan pal. I think I'll go out and find a girl and do a little passionate necking.
Oh, George.
Now, if you'll just point me in the right direction. This direction? Good night, Mrs. Bailey.
So George strolls over to the Hatch house. Mary spots him as soon as he gets within eye shot of the house.
Hello, Mary. I just happened to be passing by.
Yes, so I noticed. Have you made up your mind yet?
How's that?
Have you made up your mind?
About what?
About coming in. Your mother just phoned and said you were on your way over to pay me a visit.
My mother just called you? Well, how did she know?
Didn't you tell her?
I didn't tell anybody. I just went for a walk and happened to be passing by.
Well, are you coming in or aren't you?
Well, I've come in for a minute, but I didn't tell anybody I was coming over here.
Oh, okay. Would you like to sit down? It wasn't highlighted, sorry.
All right, just for a minute. I still can't understand it, though. You know, I didn't tell anybody I was coming here.
Would you rather leave?
No, I don't want to be rude.
Well, then sit down.
I see it still smells like pine needles in here.
Thank you.
Well, I...
It was nice about your brother Harry and Ruth, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's all right.
Don't you like her?
Well, of course I like her. She's a peach.
Oh, it's just marriage in general you're not enthusiastic about, huh?
No, marriage is all right for Harry, and Mary, and Sam, and you.
Mary! Mary! Who's down there with you?
It's George Bailey, Mother.
George Bailey, what does he want?
I don't know. What do you want?
Me? I don't want a thing. I just came in to get warm.
He's making violent love to me, Mother.
You tell him to go right back home, and don't you leave the house either, Sam Wainwright. Promised to call you from New York tonight.
But your mother needn't. You know, I didn't come here to...
What did you come here for?
I don't know. You tell me. You're supposed to be the one that has all the answers. You tell me.
Oh, why don't you just go home?
That's where I'm going. I don't know why I came here in the first place. Good night.
Good night.
Mary, Mary, the telephone. It's Sam.
Oh.
It's called again, Mary. It's on the phone again.
I'll get it.
Mary, he's waiting.
Hello?
Oh, hello. I forgot my hat.
Hee-haw. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Oh, great. Gee, it's good to hear your voice again.
Oh, well, that's awfully sweet of you, Sam. There's an old friend of yours here, George Bailey.
Hee-haw! Put him on!
Wait a minute. I'll call him. George!
He doesn't want to speak to George, you idiot.
He does so. He asked for him. George! Sam wants to speak to you.
Hello, Sam.
Well, George Bailey-ovsky. Hey, a fine pal you are. What are you trying to do, steal my girl?
What do you mean? Nobody's trying to steal your girl. Here. Here's Mary.
No, no, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I want to talk to both of you. Tell Mary to get on the extension.
We can both hear. Come here. We're listening, Sam.
I've got a great big deal that's coming up that's going to make us all rich. George, you remember that night in Martini's Bar when you told me you read someplace about making plastics out of soybeans?
Huh? Yeah, soybeans, yeah.
Well, Dad snapped up the idea. He's going to build a factory outside of Rochester. How do you like that?
Rochester.
Well, Rochester.
Well, why Rochester?
Well, why not? Can you think of anything better?
Oh, I don't know. Why not right here? You remember that old tool and machinery works? You tell your father he can get that for a song. Get all the labor he wants, too. Half the town was thrown out of work when they closed down.
That's so? Well, I'll tell him. Hey, that sounds great. Aw, baby. I knew you'd come through. Now, here's the point. Mary, you're in on this, too. Now, listen. Have you got any money?
Money? Well, yeah, a little.
Now listen. I want you to put every cent you've got into our stock, you hear? And, George, I might have a job for you. That is, unless you're still married to that broken-down old building and loan. This is the biggest thing since radio, and I'm letting you in on the ground floor. Oh, Mary.
I'm here.
Would you tell this guy I'm giving him the chance of a lifetime, you hear? The chance of a lifetime.
He says it's the chance of a lifetime.
Now, you listen to me. I don't want any plastics, I don't want any ground floors, and I don't want to get married ever to anyone. You understand that? I want to do what I want to do. And you're... Oh, Mary.
George.
George and Mary were wed 4 months later, and as they exit the church to head off for a glorious two-week honeymoon, they're picked up in the cab of their good friend, Ernie the cab driver.
If either of you two see a stranger around here, it's me.
Hey, look, somebody's driving this cab.
Bert. The cop sent this over.
What? You are so dumb.
Isn't that Bert?
Bert, the cop sent this over. Bert, the cop sent this over.
Unbelievable. You know, maybe Michael Merrick could play the role of Ernie.
Thank you. Bert, the cop sent this over. He said to float away to Happy Land on the bubbles.
Oh, look at this champagne.
Good old Bert.
By the way, where are you two going on this honeymoon? Huh?
Where are we going? Look at this. There's the kitty, Ernie. Come on. Count it, Mary.
I feel like a bootlegger's wife. Look.
You know what we're going to do? We're going to shoot the works. A week in New York, a whole week in Bermuda, the highest hotels, the oldest champagne, the richest caviar, the hottest music, and the prettiest wife.
That does it. Then what?
Then what, honey?
After that, who cares?
That does it. Come here.
Hey, don't look now, but there's something funny going on over there at the bank. George, I've never really seen one, but that's got all the earmarks of a run.
George, let's not stop. Let's go.
Just a minute, dear. Uh-oh.
Please, let's not stop, George.
I'll be back in a minute, Mary.
George heads over to the building and loan to find a long line of shareholders and locked front doors. Bewildered at the goings-on, he unlocks the front doors and lets the harried customers in out of the rain. He enters and finds a panicked Uncle Billy sneaking a drink.
Come on, everybody. That's right. Come in. Now, look, why don't you all sit down? There are a lot of seats over there. Just make yourselves at home.
George, can I see you a minute?
Why didn't you call me?
I just did, but they said you left. This is a pickle, George. This is a pickle.
Okay, now what happened? How did it start?
How does anything like this ever start, George? All I know is the bank called our loan.
When?
About an hour ago. I had to hand over all our cash.
All of it?
Every cent of it. And it still was less than we owe.
Holy man. Holy mackerel.
And then I got scared. George, I got scared and closed the doors.
The whole town's gone crazy.
Yes, hello. George, it's Potter.
Hello,
George. There's a rumor around town that you closed your doors. Is that true? Well, I'm very glad to hear that. George, are you all right? Do you need any police?
Police? What for?
Well, mobs get pretty ugly sometimes, you know, George. I'm going all out to help in this crisis. I've just guaranteed the bank sufficient funds to meet their needs. And they'll close up for a week and then reopen.
Uncle Billy, he just took over the bank.
I may lose a fortune, but I'm willing to guarantee your people, too. Just tell them to bring their shares over here, and I will pay them 50 cents on the dollar.
Oh, you never miss a trick, do you, Potter? Well, you're gonna miss this one, old man.
No, if you close your doors before 6 p.m., you will never reopen.
But 2 years later, the building and loan is still plugging along, and Mr. Potter still hates it. He's in a meeting with his head bookkeeper.
Now, just remember, this thing isn't as black as it appears. I have some news for you folks. I just talked to old man Potter, and he's guaranteed cash payments in the bank. The bank is going to reopen next week.
But, George, I got my money here. Did he guarantee this place?
Well, no, Charlie. I didn't even ask him. We don't need Potter over here.
I'll take mine now, then.
No, but you're thinking of this place all wrong, as if I had the money back in the safe. The money's not here. Your money's in Joe's house.
Who's Mrs. Thompson?
She's an older lady and has a hard time getting around.
But my husband hasn't worked in over a year, and I need money. How am I going to live until the bank opens?
I got bills to pay.
I need cash. Can't feed my kids on faith.
How much do you need?
Hey, I got $2,000. Here's $2,000. That'll tide us over until the bank reopens. Okay, Tom, how much do you need?
$242.
Aw, Tom... Just enough to tide you over until the bank reopens.
I'll take $242.
There you are.
That'll close my account.
No. Your account is still here. That's a loan. Okay, now, Mrs. Thompson, how much do you want?
But it's your money, George. Your own money.
Never mind about that. How much do you want?
Oh, I can get along with 20, all right.
All right, good. $20.
You don't sign the paper.
You don't have to sign anything. I know you'll pay it back when you can. That's okay.
Through understanding customers and the money from his honeymoon, George was able to keep the Bailey Building and Loan open until 6 that night. And he goes home to his wife, Mary. And to his surprise, their home is now the old Granville house, almost as dilapidated as it was when they threw rocks at it years before, but still very, very romantic.
Welcome home, Mr. Bailey.
Well, I'll be. Mary... Where did you... Mary.
Remember the night we broke the windows in this old house? This is what I wished for.
Darling,
you're wonderful.
2 years later, the building and loan is still plugging along, and Mr. Potter still hates it. He's in a meeting with his head bookkeeper.
Look, Mr. Potter, it's no skin off my nose. I'm just a little rent collector. But you can't laugh off this Bailey Park anymore. Look at it.
Congressman Blantz is here to see you.
Well, tell the congressman to wait. Go on.
15 years ago, a half dozen houses stuck here and there. There's the old cemetery, squirrels, buttercups, daisies. Used to inhabit there myself. Look at it today. Dozens of the prettiest little homes you ever saw. 90% of them owned by suckers who used to pay rent to you. Your product field, my dear Mr. Employer, is becoming just that. And are the local yokels making with those Davis and Goliath wisecracks?
Well, they are they? Even though they know the Baileys haven't made a dime out of it?
You know very well. Well, why? The Baileys were all chumps. Every one of those homes is worth twice what it cost the building alone to build it. Oy. If I were you, Mr. Potter...
Well, you're not me.
As I say, it's no skin off my nose, but one of these days, this bright young man is going to be asking George Bailey for a job.
The Bailey family has been a boil on my VA long enough.
And George has a high-powered meeting with the evil Mr. Potter.
Thank you, sir. Quite a cigar, Mr. Potter.
You like it? I'll send you a box.
Well, I suppose I'll find out sooner or later, but just what exactly did you want to see me about?
George, now that's just what I like so much about you. George, I'm an old man, and most people hate me, but I don't like him either, so that makes it all even. You know just as well as I do that I run practically everything in this town but the Bailey Building alone. You know also that for a number of years I've been trying to get control of it, or kill it, but I haven't been able to.
No.
You've been stopping me. In fact, you've been beating me, George. And as anyone in this country can tell you, that takes some doing. Take during the Depression, for instance. You and I were the only ones that kept our heads. You saved the building and loan, and I saved all the rest.
Yes, well, most people say you stole all the rest.
The envious ones say that, George. The suckers. Now, I have stated my side very frankly. Now, let's look at your side. Young man, 27, 28, married, making, say, 40 a week.
45?
45. 45. Out of which, after supporting your mother and paying your bills, you're able to keep, say, 10. If you skimp, a child or two comes along and you won't even be able to save the 10. Now, if this young man of 28 was a common, ordinary yokel, I'd say he was doing fine. But George Bailey is not a common, ordinary yokel. He's an intelligent, smart, ambitious young man who hates his job, who hates the building and loan almost as much as I do, a young man who's been dying to get out on his own ever since he was born, a young man, smartest one of the crowd, mind you, a young man who has to sit by and watch his friends go places because he's trapped, yes, sir, trapped into frittering his life away, playing nursemaid to a lot of garlic eaters. Do I paint a correct picture? Or do I exaggerate?
Now, what's your point, Mr. Potter?
My point? My point is I want to hire you.
Hire me?
I want you to manage my affairs, run my properties. George, I'll start you out at $20,000 a year.
$20,000 a year?
You wouldn't mind living in the nicest house in town. Buying your wife a lot of fine clothes, a couple of business trips to New York a year, maybe once in a while Europe. You wouldn't mind that, would you, George?
Would I? You're not talking to somebody else around here, you know. This is me, you remember, right? George Bailey?
Oh, yes, yes. George Bailey, whose ship has just come in, providing he has brains enough to climb aboard.
But what about the building and loan?
Oh, confound it, man. Are you afraid of success? I'm offering you a 3-year contract at $20,000 a year, starting today. Is it a deal or isn't it?
Well, Mr. Potter, I know I ought to jump at the chance, but I wonder, would it be possible for you to give me 24 hours to think it over?
Sure, sure. Sure, you go on home and talk about it to your wife.
I'd like to do that.
In the meantime, I'll draw up the papers.
All right, sir.
Okay, George.
Okay, Mr. Potter. No. No, now, wait a minute here. I don't have to talk to anybody. I know right now, and the answer is no. No! No, doggone it.
No.
You sit around here and you spin your little webs and you think the whole world revolves around you and your money. Well, it doesn't, Mr. Potter. No. In the whole vast configuration of things, I'd say you're nothing more than a scurvy little spider. You, no. That goes for you, too. That goes for you, too. Yeah.
We now skip ahead a few more years to Christmas Eve 1944, and we find America in the grip of World War II. On Main Street in Bedford Falls, George meets Ernie the cab driver. George excitedly shows him the headlines of the morning paper. It reads that Harry Bailey is to receive the Congressional Medal of Honor for saving an entire transport full of American troops. Harry is a war hero.
Hey, Ernie, look at this.
Yeah, gonna snow again, huh?
What do you mean it's gonna snow again? Look at the headlines.
Oh, I know. I think it's marvelous.
Extra! Extra! Read all about it!
A very excited George rushes to the building and alone to spread the good news.
George, it's Harry. Now on long distance from Washington.
Harry, what do you know about that?
He reversed the charges. It's okay, isn't it?
What do you mean it's okay? For a hero? Harry! You old seven times of a son of a gun. Congratulations. How's Mother standing it?
She did.
What do you know? Mother had lunch with the president's wife.
Wait till Martha hears about this.
What? Uncle Billy? Has Uncle Billy come in yet?
No, he stopped at the bank first.
He's not here right now, Harry. But look.
George.
Now tell me about it.
George, that man's here again.
What man?
Bank examiner.
Oh. Talk to Eustace for a minute, will you? I'll be right back. Good morning, sir.
Oh, Carter. Bank examiner.
Mr. Carter, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas.
We're all very, very excited around here. My brother just got the Congressional Medal of Honor. The president just decorated it.
Yeah, well, I guess they do those things. I trust you had a good year.
Good year? Well, between you and me, Mr. Carter, we're broke.
Ha! Very funny.
Well, now come right in here, Mr. Carter.
Although I shouldn't wonder when you okay reverse charges on personal long-distance calls.
George, shall we hang up?
No. He wants to talk to Uncle Billy. You just hold on.
Now, if you cooperate, I'd like to finish with you by tonight. I want to spend Christmas in Elmira with my family.
I don't blame you at all, Mr. Carter. Just step right in here. We'll fix you up.
Meanwhile, at the Bedford Falls Bank, Uncle Billy is getting ready to make a big bank deposit for the building and loan when Mr. Potter gets pushed into the bank in his wheelchair while reading the paper. Uncle Billy can't resist taunting him.
This is a great scene, and we'll break and come right back with more of It's a Wonderful Life. That's next.
Radio Gods, Don and Mike.